Sorry, we're just getting a few things set up and then we will begin. Okay. I think we are pretty good to go. Okay, well, welcome everybody to the Data Science for Security and Forensics course. Glad to welcome you all. And before we have Andre begin with the lectures today, I just wanted to run through some administrative things about the course, about the assignments, about the tests, and kind of how things work. But also just to introduce ourselves to you and hopefully yourselves to us. So without kind of further ado, here's kind of what I'm going to talk about. So in particular, I'm going to go over things like grading details, some questions that people have regarding the homework and the expectations of the homework, the kind of syllabus of the lectures and tutorials that we'll be giving throughout the semester, and talking about things like the textbook. And we'll also be trying to develop a reference group. So this is essentially a quality assurance group from you guys who represents the students and gives feedback to us, the lecturers, and so forth. So I'm Kyle Porter. I'm the course responsible for this course. I'm a researcher here at NCNU in digital forensics and investigations. And just as a kind of brief introduction, some of the research that I'm working on right now, it's about applying some kind of machine learning to digital investigations. So for instance, we have a project going on right now called AI for Interviews. And this is where we are trying to apply natural language processing to expedite digital investigations. And in more particular, we are also trying to apply automatic speech recognition, which is an automatic version of transcription of investigative interviews in Norwegian, you call it avhør. And this too should kind of expedite the investigative process, especially for the interviewers. So rather than them having to manually transcribe interviews, say from, you know, it can be from children or from adults or from et cetera, then the machine is at least doing the first transcription, and then there's a human in the loop who corrects the transcription and produces the final transcript as evidence. Then we have Andre, who's our lecturer, and he can introduce himself.
Yes, thank you very much, Kyle. Welcome, everyone, for today's lecture. So some of you already know me from semester autumn 2022. I'm teaching two courses here at NTNU. It's Introduction to Digital Forensics and Data Science for Security and Forensics. And I will be lecturing in this course through the semester. Yes.
Right. So in addition to being course responsible, I'll also be handling the tutorials, which kind of focuses more on hands-on sort of things and exploring, say, some problems mathematically, maybe. For general course information, I think the best place to go, other than maybe your email, is to use Blackboard, as that's where we publish nearly everything about this course, so things from announcements to course material like the actual homework and then the slides, et cetera, et cetera. This can all be found on Blackboard. So kind of when in doubt, check Blackboard. So this is essentially how the course works. Our classes are each week where we're going to have it in person, but we also stream and record each session as well. And this is done through the For Lesning solution by NTNU. So here's the link there. And I've uploaded these slides online already, so you can check the sources for things like links and stuff there. And the lectures are on Tuesdays, such as now, 12:15 to 4, and tutorials on Mondays, 9:15 to 12. And then we also have this additional streaming location, which I'm also using right now. And the whole purpose of why we are doing, say, streaming using For Lessening and using Zoom for streaming is so that the people at home, it's not letting me look at my Zoom at the moment. One second. So the people at home can interact with us. That's the only issue with this For Lessening solution is that, okay, it's not letting me look at the Zoom at the moment, but, okay, there we go. So there's already, okay, so there's already some comments on the Zoom, and they were saying that the volume on stream is very low. Is the audio, okay, the audio is better now? So this is the reason why we have Zoom as well as the For Lessening solution. And Paulius Visness is saying that it is impossible to see the slides. Okay, yeah, so, and Trim also has the correct idea. So we are only using Zoom not for displaying the slides, but only for communication purposes. So if you are on For Lessening, you can see the slides, you can hear the audio, etc. So Zoom is only for communication purposes. Okay, so hopefully when I bring the slides back up, let's try this again. For some reason, when I switched to Zoom, it stopped displaying the slides. Okay, here we go. Sorry. Just a moment. Okay, there we are. And not only does For Lessening do the streaming, but it also has recording. So you can find the recordings of the lectures there. Okay, so here is how the grading works in this course. You have one written exam at the end of the course, and it's currently scheduled for June 8th. And the materials are primarily from the lectures and tutorials, but we may also pull some things from the textbook, but I would say not many, if any at all. It's a 3-hour exam, and they are primarily open questions, so no multiple choice questions. And this is worth 60% of your grade. Then there are 4 homework assignments, and the due date is June 1st, and this is for all 4 of the assignments, and you upload the assignments to Inspera. And this is 40% of your grade, so for each assignment, that's 10% of your grade. And basically what this is it includes delivering a written report based on the questions that we provide you. I've already uploaded 3 of the assignments online already. And also, please upload in the archive whatever necessary code or other figures you might need to include in the report. And as far as the programming language goes, that's up to you. I have a preference towards using Python. But if you want to use MATLAB or C++ or whatever else, that's acceptable. But if you use Python, I will be happier. And of course, for any other, say, updates on the scheduling of the course and the due dates, check the course website on NTNU's page. Okay, so I'm going to go over some kind of administrative details about the assignments. So in the past, sometimes there's confusion about which libraries you can or cannot use, or maybe even there's like some minor plagiarism that has occurred. So that's why I'm talking about this. Basically, so the rule for this year is for each assignment, basically the use of tools and libraries, that's it's acceptable. It's allowed, unless specified explicitly in the homework assignment. So basically, for instance, if we ask you to implement a specific method, and we say we want to see that you can do the steps, it's okay that you're using certain libraries to, say, help you do maybe matrix multiplication or to handle the data in a more efficient way, but we want to be able to see that you can implement those necessary steps of the method. So your coursework should be your own. Basically, if we identify in the homework that there are, say, clear cases of plagiarism. So, for instance, I can see that in the homework for the program, you just copy and pasted your code from some easy-to-find website, and all the variables are the same, the comments are the same, et cetera, et cetera. You could get a zero for that assignment. In extensive plagiarism, say, copying another student, or having even worse cases of plagiarism with the code, there's a possibility that we can report you for plagiarism. So don't, you know, try not to do plagiarism. So kind of the general rules that I have regarding the use of code found online, like if you do use something, just say where you got it from. And if you're using some code that is from online and you say, okay, I'm not going to change it that much, at the very least, provide some comments on what that code does or why you're using it, something that tells me that you're thinking rather than just copying and pasting. And each of the assignments, I've included a detailed FAQ, a frequently asked questions sort of list, saying, okay, here are the expectations of the assignments. Here's what is okay in terms of resources and what is not okay. So each assignment has this at the end of the assignment. Check that, read it first if you have any questions. Otherwise, you can send an email to me. Right. So we have these seven lectures, which are kind of more traditional delivery of the material and some theoretical coverage. And then we have the tutorials. And in the tutorials, it's very much kind of a review session of the content you ideally have already been introduced to. I go over the theoretical materials maybe again to emphasize it, but also we go through some actual exercises, which goes through showing how particular methods work, which is important for the homework. So in the tutorials, I try to show, if we ask you to implement something in the homework, generally there's a tutorial wherein I'm trying to implement an easy version of it such that you can transfer that knowledge to the homework. And furthermore, we'll have some kind of essentially run through some code to do some actual kind of hands-on machine learning. And also I'm also trying to include more practical tasks this semester, so not only just the focus on fundamentals of machine learning, but also how we can apply it to either digital forensics or information security. The final session for the course is either going to be a guest lecture or a mock trial exam. And if we don't end up getting a guest lecture, we will still upload the mock exam if there's no guest lecture held. And I've decided this year to have office hours. So in the past, people have just emailed me whenever throughout the week, and that's okay for you to do regarding questions and if you need help with assignments, et cetera, or whatnot. But basically, Wednesdays from 10 to 12, it's like you can expect me to be there to answer these things, and potentially you can even just essentially call me through Zoom or through Teams for a chat about a particular subject. So these are digital office hours, unless you send me an email and specify, oh, I'd like to meet on campus to discuss this or that problem. So just for your knowledge. And So in terms of the course and kind of what to expect, here I've given each of these seven lecture and tutorial pairs. And in this first line, you can see here, there is the suggested reading for that that week from the book from Kononenko or Chio. And then I go into the details of what this is about. And then I have a kind of a summary of what this is about. So this first week, things you can expect is kind of the basics of machine learning, getting across some of the very basic fundamentals. The second week, the focus is how to evaluate some of these machine learning models, in particular classifiers that we train. The third week is basically how to optimize some of these machine learning models. How does the actual, say, learning work such that we can tune these models to this data that we've seen in the past? Lecture and tutorial four, we talk about things like how to prepare and optimize choice of features, so it's a bit meta in that regard. And then I'd say from lecture five and on, it gets less about general knowledge and more specific about maybe some more specific kinds of algorithms. So tutorial five, we're looking at a more in-depth look at some specific learning algorithms, in particular statistical approaches and rule-based learning. This includes things like decision trees. Lecture and tutorial six, I say it's state-of-the-art techniques primarily for classification, but it's more like the basics of the state-of-the-art. So here we talk about things like artificial neural networks and deep learning and support vector machines and kernel functions. And the last lecture and tutorial is about unsupervised learning with a focus in particular on the subject of clustering. Just to get an idea, how many people here have had any sort of experience at all with machine learning, like using very basic things? Okay, a couple people. How in-depth did you go? Was it just using some libraries to do some classification, or I just want to get the idea of what you were doing.
OCR.
Okay. So optical character recognition, this is a form of machine learning. Yeah, sure. And you two, what did you use it for?
I did some clustering,
but so OK. So you did k-nearest neighbors, classification algorithm, and clustering. And you said you had played around it?
Classification.
And regression, okay. Yeah, so I think in our course we focus mostly on supervised methods, in particular classification as opposed to regression. We do talk about regression a little bit. And like you saw, we primarily go over the supervised approaches, but we do go over unsupervised approaches as well. So let me just check the chat to see if anybody is saying anything. I have to constantly switch between here and there. Because sometimes I cannot hear if anybody's saying any messaging us. But okay, good. So most people here are pretty fresh when it comes to machine learning, which is kind of what the course is intended for. But we also try to, people who are more experienced, get you kind of more theoretical understanding of things and more well-rounded look at machine learning and data science and hopefully how it can be applied to digital forensics or information security. So I also have here descriptions of each of the assignments. I'm not going to go into the details right now. I've already uploaded assignments 1, 2, and 3, and I've also said when I expect that you can finish these assignments based on the lecture and tutorial content. So for instance, for assignment 1, you should be able to complete it after lecture and tutorial 2, for instance. I've not uploaded assignment 4 yet. I'm still working on it. I'm currently not happy with the position it's at, so it needs a little bit more work. Just general advice when it comes to the assignments. Generally speaking, assignment 1 and assignment 4 are easier than assignment 2 and 3. Assignment 2 and 3 require that you implement some particular algorithms, which some students struggle with. But again, in the tutorials, I do try to do hands-on approaches to how to solve these kinds of algorithms. So you can ideally transfer the knowledge from there to the actual homework. The course for the kind of the course textbook we have here is Machine Learning and Data Mining by Conan Nenko. And the good things about it is that it has good breadth and completeness from a machine learning kind of theoretical standpoint. So kind of when you look at the big picture of machine learning and you follow through the chapters, you get a good broad understanding of the content. However, this textbook sometimes, some of the cons is that it can be a little wordy and philosophical, and it's showing its age. It's a bit of an old book. But again, I try to include other resources such that if you're confused with the content there, you can find other places to read and understand some of the content. Additional reading is Machine Learning and Security, Protecting Systems with Data and Algorithms by Chio. And this is, it's a pretty nice textbook. Some of the pros is that when it talks about machine learning, it's mostly understandable. and maybe easier to read than the Conan Enko textbook. It has many practical chapters, so it has essentially everything after chapter, I think after chapter three or four, has these Python examples going through how we can apply particular methods of machine learning to information security. And it has a GitHub that you can follow and check out the examples there. The kind of the downside, though, is that the theoretical layers are very brief. So sometimes it starts talking about an idea, and it kind of assumes the reader already has an idea of what it's talking about, when maybe that's not the case. Okay, so last but not least, I think I've been talking a while now, and I can let Andre actually give his lecture here. We need this reference group, so the Student Quality Assurance Group. I've kind of provided a brief description of what it is here, and I've said it before, but is anybody interested in being, right now, a student representative for you guys, such that you can give back some quality assurance to us? Think about it. It just requires you to attend, say, some extra meetings throughout the semester with me regarding reflecting on the actual contents and the learning objectives. And at the end, you have to prepare a report regarding the total outcome of how well we achieve these learning objectives and suggestions on how to change the course in the coming years. So think about it. We need at least three members. Ideally, they are represented by each one of the kind of students that we have, full-time student, part-time student, and remote students. And so if you're interested, please email us by February 16th. Otherwise, we may select the students for you. So we would prefer it to be a democratic approach rather than not. So yes, that's all with the administrative items. Sorry for maybe going on for a bit too long. Any initial questions before we get into some of the actual content? No? Oh, yes. I would say do a light reading of the chapters beforehand for Conan Enko, unless you find it to be inherently interesting before the lectures. And then if you wish to kind of reestablish and kind of confirm your knowledge, go back after the actual lectures and tutorials. Like I said, sometimes Conan Enko can be a little bit confusing and wordy, so that is why I think you should take a light reading approach before the lectures. Yeah. Okay, so I think I'm done here. So, Andre, we can switch over to you.
Yeah, thanks. All right, welcome to the lecture part. So today I'm going to give you the introduction to machine learning, introduction to artificial intelligence, why do we need it. I think I mentioned briefly in the previous lectures about AI and what's the benefit of using AI and why do we need it actually. I just wanted to ask, how many of you know this tool called ChatGPT? All right, and how many of you try this tool? Perfect. And how many of you try this tool to pass the exam? That was a joke. But still, like the whole idea that, you know, we're in the age where the technology, I mean, not just, let's say, software processing and data processing capabilities, but also the hardware optimization gives us tools like ChatGPT. And, I mean, this is not the most advanced thing. So there will be more and more things coming where AI will, you know, make these fascinating things that, like, we can't really comprehend because it generates like so well structured text, and it's not just like a copy text, copy paste, but you know, it's fully generated text. And that's the example of let's say AI application like neural networks, you know, where we can gather a lot of information and put them in one model that can actually generate human understandable solutions. And things that we can comprehend, you know, while, you know, the amount of data is so huge that we cannot really even store them on our computers. So that's the idea of AI and how it works. So I believe Kyle already mentioned most of the organizational parts. So two of the books that we selected for this course, Kononenko and Chio, it's really nice combination because Kononenko gives you like theoretical understanding, because you might be like wondering why we need one or another tool, or why do we need these parameters in the methods. So this is very very details, and also they presented like algorithms, so you can check, you know, how most of the machine learning models can work. Chio's a little bit different approach. They use more practical demonstrations of how you implement it in Python. Because naturally, Python is one of the most popular languages for data processing and for machine learning. So, like, depending on what kind of data you have, still, in most of the cases, you're going to use Python, especially in this course, in the tutorials. Now, the introduction. I guess most of you know what statistics and basic terms or terminologies in the terminology in the statistic, like, you know, average, mean, mode, and so on. So that's technically a simplest AI. So we can't say this is AI, but it's still a simplest way to characterize and to define all the properties and sometimes relationship between the data. In our world. So sometimes the companies represent, you know, the products that where they have AI, while in a matter of fact, it's just statistics. So they use some kind of, you know, like average mean. Like, for example, we want to check what's the average temperature in the rooms, right? So it's not AI, it's just gathering the information across like 10 days maybe, and then making an average. So that's just a summary or a modeling, statistical modeling. So you'll see, you know, things from statistics a lot, especially when it comes to regression, because regression is part of machine learning where we try to predict some things. Like if you go to year.no and you want to check the temperature for the next couple days, still you can see it, right? Even though we don't really know what the temperature will be. But still you can check and you can get at least some confident guess what it will be. So that's the example of statistics, different methods like, for example, regression, moving average, and so on. And in the same way, it's applied to stock market predictions, like, for example, also if you're looking into Bitcoin prices, right? So that's the statistic-based prediction and statistics-based analysis. So this is where we'll see statistical modeling. Now, AI, that's the whole area, right? So it's a multiple things that included in AI, like, for example, machine learning, deep learning. So it started always, you know, a lot of good theoretical justification, like, for example, 50s, 70s. Now, the problem then was that we didn't have really computers, you know, that can process such data. So it was AI winters. Then it came to the point where, you know, computers became popular, like supercomputers, grid, cloud. So all these technologies enabled processing of data much faster. And nowadays we have a very cheap hardware, very cheap and reliable software that we can use for processing of the data. So that's why we get this, like, deep learning, deep neural networks, convolutional neural networks. So all these advanced methods that can do processing in a very short period of time. So what's ML, machine learning? Machine learning technically is the method where a computer is being trained according to some algorithm. So we have just a normal, like, you know, simple, for example, 10, 20 steps. We take this piece of data, we feed it into the model, and then, you know, we do some kind of multiplication, weighting, and so on. And we repeat it maybe a few times. So that's the whole idea of machine learning. It's been, let's say, when the computer is being trained from the data using some kind of algorithm. So that's the whole idea of using machine learning in that sense. I'd like to show you also the slides from, let me see. So that's the introduction. Introduction to machine learning and just a general, let's say, view, like, why do we need and what's the use cases, how we apply it in general, so not specifically to security or forensics. Right. So first of all, as I mentioned, machine learning is just a methodology where we use algorithm. Like, for example, if you're looking for algorithm description, you can check Kononen because they have very nice a description of algorithms. So machine learning is very good at some specific tasks, like, for example, recognition of the images. So AI is a little bit more high-level concept where we get more advanced decision-making and, let's say, decision support systems, right? Like ChatGPT, you can ask questions and the system will give you an answer. So that's the expert system, technically. So for ML, we're looking more into solving one specific task, right? So for example, image recognition, a robot playing football, a coffee machine preparing, you know, some coffee based on your habits. So that's something that is normally considered ML, so solving one specific task, right? Now, the problem that you can't teach a coffee machine to play football and vice versa, you know, the robot maybe at some point will be able to make a coffee. So that's the difference between AI and machine learning. So machine learning is solving, let's say, some specific task, while AI is more generic, like, you know, things that can do, like, anything. So machine learning is not a magic. So we don't really have, you know, as I mentioned, a unique kind of overarching machine learning method that can solve everything and, you know, that can do a variety of things, because first and most important, we need data. Like, to prepare the coffee, we need to have coffee habits. To play the football, we need to understand the rules, you know, in the game. So that's the whole idea of, you know, having this difference between AI and machine learning. So it's very good at solving some of the specific tasks that we give and that we fit into the model. Let's see. So let's assume we want to classify some images, right? Because image classification is one of the most prominent application of, let's say, computer vision, machine learning, convolutional neural network. For example, have you tried images.google.com to look for some similar images? How many of you tried this service? All right, some of you tried. So I can recommend you to go to images.google.com and look for some image. And the whole idea that, you know, it takes image, it recognizes some distinct specific features, and then it gives you recommendation for maybe, you know, like 1, 2, 3 pages of similar images. So if you're looking for some image and you don't remember, or, you know, some building, you don't remember where you've seen this building, it's the fantastic tool, because it can point you towards, you know, some additional information, like where is this building is located. So the difference between human brain let's say machine learning is that, you know, it can do it really fast. So it means that, like, if we are human, we need to, you know, to see and see the difference, first of all, between, like, you know, a dog and a cat, you know, to find some features. For machine learning, it's done automatically and in a very fast manner. So that's the whole idea of, you know, having machine learning to automate the process. Not just automation, but also finding the different patterns, because later in this course we will see different types of machine learning methods: regression, the one that I mentioned before, classification, but also clustering. So if we need to find, you know, some of the specific patterns in the data, machine learning again can help us. So for example, you know, if we have some kind of products, we need to find the audience for the product. So this again can be done automatically. We can, you know, try to talk to the clients, you know, based on the preferences, based on some additional information. Or we can use machine learning following some data. So if we have some kind of historical data, this is the place to apply machine learning. And in the end, we can get a very nice solution. So it's often about optimization of some task, optimization of some specific, let's say, solution. So in general, you will see in this course introduction to algorithmics. So like how to, for example, build the machine learning model. What are the steps? Like, for example, neural network. How do we train neural network? So we need input data, we need weights, we need structure of the neural network, and then we need also parameters, like how many iterations, how many layers, how many neurons, and so on. So it's all together, right? So having all together, we are able to train and to deliver this model and to apply it to real-world solutions. Like some of you will be looking for the, for the master thesis projects, and, you know, one of the applications is when you use machine learning to solve some tasks, like, for example, computer virus classification, network traffic classification, and so on. So technically, you can build a very interesting project, having the data and having the machine learning model to process this data. Just a few ideas for your later project. Now, the most important part, of course, having the machine learning algorithm to process the data, but also having the data, right? So if we don't have any data, we can't propose the solution. And the same applies for machine learning. If we don't have the data, or the data actually a very bad quality, then it's a little chance we get a good model. So all these efforts in building, training the model will be worthless, right? So it means that it's not worth, you know, even to try it or to start these types of tasks. Now, there are different methods, and also we'll show later in this lecture and in other lectures that we have so many different types of methods. So most of the methods, they were designed like, you know, 80s, 90s, like support vector machine, neural network. Most of the state-of-the-art and, let's say, research projects that we have now is the optimization, right? Because the amount of data that these methods were applied, like in 80s, 90s, were like, you know, megabytes, maybe gigabytes at most. Now we have hundreds, you know, millions of terabytes sometimes. So the whole idea now is to use, for example, artificial neural network, but also to optimize it so that, you know, we can grasp all this data and we can process this data and we can, you know, do it very fast. You'll see also what's the difference between, for example, parallel optimization and sequential processing, right? But in general, if you take, for example, support vector machine, artificial neural networks, so all these three methods, the first one, the second one, and the third one, essentially they can be applied to solve the same task. So in the end, you'll get the same answer like classification. The accuracy will be different, the speed will be different, the complexity, so how much memory in computer these models will take, but essentially they can do the same task. Like, for example, dishwasher, you know, the whole point is to get the dishes clean, and then it doesn't matter whether you use like huge industrial machine, small machine, you know, or some other types, portable machines. The whole idea is to solve the task. And the same way how it works here. Even though we have so many different types of methods out there, there is no, let's say, kind of silver bullet that can solve everything. Like many people consider neural network or artificial neural network as a very good solution because it can generalize to any type of data. Even though we have mistakes, we have errors in the data, still we can we can say that there are no methods that can, you know, solve or fulfill all our needs. So neural network is good. Unfortunately, it does not generate human understandable model. So as you will see later, neural network is just set of weights. So why do we have with these weights? It's hard to understand. It's just the way how the algorithm works. Right. So in general, how the machine learning works, as I mentioned, the most important part is data. So if we have very good data processed without any errors or mistakes, then in most of the cases, you'll get a very good solution and very good model. So having the data is one thing. Another thing is to have a training algorithm. As I mentioned, most of the algorithms you could see in Kononenko, so you can check, you know, what's the input, what's the output, what are the steps, you know, what's the processing mechanism, what kind of variables we take. So please refer to Kononenko if you have a need. And then, you know, once the algorithm is trained using this data, we get a model. So normally, just to give you an example, if we train let's assume we have a neural network here, and then we have 100 gigabytes of data. So once it trained, it might be like 10 kilobytes of data, the model itself. So the model summarizes the data and all the relationship in the data. So we can technically have, you know, a data reduction because this model summarizes the data and we don't really need this data anymore. Because it's the summary of everything that we have. So the model is just a compact representation of the data. Yes, please.
Quick question. That model is only specified for that specific data set, so that if the data set consists of animal classification, the model can only be used for animal classification?
Very good point. Thank you. So the algorithm is universal. You can apply it to any kind of data. But the model is very specific to the data. So if there will be change in the data, like change in the properties, we need to retrain it again, and it will take some time. So like there are some approaches where we can use the same kind of model to different type of of data, but still the accuracy might be low. So the rule of thumb, if you get any changes in the data or new data, you need to train a model again. So then you'll get most up-to-date, you know, information. It's like, you know, if you have the information or historical data about Bitcoin from 2011 to 2013, and then you want to apply this, like, model prediction, you know, in 2023, in most of the cases, it will be wrong, right? So then you need to retrain it and get more up-to-date information. But a very good point. So please remember that every time you get changes in the data, you need to update a model. So that there can be different types of model. Again, it can be just a statistical coefficients. It can be anything like, for example, neural network weights, and it can be linguistic rules, So the models can be different, but as I mentioned, they designed to solve the same set of tasks. So our example, using two variables. So normally we talk about variables, characteristics, or attributes. So these are synonyms. So using the weight, and using the horsepower, we need to predict whether the car has good or bad mileage, gas mileage. So, you know, how many miles, kilometers it can go using 1 10-liter. So we need to make a very, very simple prediction using just these two variables. So you can see that it's nothing. There is no clear, explicit correlation relationship between weight and horsepower with the gas mileage and the task. Right, so we don't have, you know, any kind of reflection to that point. So this is two like variables independent that we want to connect together using the model. Now we have training data. So normally when we train a model using the algorithm, we talk about data or training data. So in this case we have 9 cars, and some of those they have labels as bad gas mileage, or for example, good gas mileage, and we have the features that normally we want to use for such classification. Let's assume we have the trained or the finished model that we will be using for for such classification. So technically, if we say that this is trained model, we can say that, you know, it's relatively intelligent because we use the previous or historical information. And then, you know, the model can be as simple as, for example, decision tree. So it can be a set of weights. It can be, for example, a set of rules. So we'll see later about it. As we have only two variables, we're going to use the first one. So the weight, if the car is heavy. If it's heavy, then the gas mileage will be bad. If we have a car that is relatively light and the horsepower is less than 200, then the car will be good. If not, then it's a bad car in terms of gas mileage. So technically, that's the representation of, you know, of the whole data. I mean, that's the data transition from 9 samples in the data, in the training data, to just a tree. So it also can be, for example, a neural network, and so on. Let's see. I suggest that we take a short break until 13:10, and then we start again. All right, welcome back. So we've talked briefly about the models, so different types of models. I mean, it's not just one set of model that or the format of the model that all the machine learning models are using, but different. So in this case, it's a tree. So this is something that we want for our example, right? So we have nine data samples, two features, and one class, either bad gas mileage or good gas mileage. And the whole idea is to transfer this data into the model, so into something that we can apply and we can use, for example, in production in real life. So that's the desire. Now, to do so, we need to train. So the process of training means that we take the data, we put it into algorithm, or we process them according to the algorithm, and we receive a model in the end. It's the same as, for example, fine-tuning the FM. So in the time when everyone used the FM, I mean, this example is perhaps a bit outdated because of the DAP. You don't really fine-tune, things in DAP. But if you look FM radio, so you always had to fine-tune so that, the frequency of the radio station matches the frequency of your receiver, then, the quality will be the best. So that's the same example, same approach that is used in machine learning. You train the model in a way that it fits the data, the training data, as good as possible. So in that case, you'll get a very good performance, for example, like 100% classification accuracy, so something that is very very usable. So once we have the model trained into a tree, we can apply this model. So why do we need to train the model if you don't use it, right? So application of the model means that we have something like a new sample, data sample, or new car that we want to test. So we want to answer the question whether this car has a good or bad gas mileage based on the features. Two features was the horsepower and the weight, right? So, for example, we have a new car, but we don't know the mileage. And then, supposedly we check that this car is not heavy and the horsepower is less than 200. So it means that the car has a good gas mileage. So that's the prediction. In this example, we have only two classes, right? The bad gas mileage and good gas mileage. So that's binary classification. We only have two classes. Normally, in such case, we refer to the samples of such class as either positive or negative. So it depending, on the terminology, but we normally say that, it's positive or negative. So the sample is positive, so it means that it has a good gas mileage. The sample is negative if it has bad gas mileage. So that's the whole idea. Sometimes we also will have false positive. How many of you have heard about false positives? Perfect. So this is very much applicable to attack detection, like intrusion detection, CM systems. So sometimes you might see or... might get an alert that there is an attack ongoing in the system while there is no attack. It's just, probably another traffic that looked like an attack. So the whole idea is that, we have a new fancy police car and then we try to check it and then we get, the classification as good gas mileage. But then when we test it, actually, we do the empirical test, it turns out that the car has a bad gas mileage. So there is a false positive. So the model predicted that the car has a good gas mileage. Well, in the fact, in real life, it has a bad gas mileage. So it happens. Oops, let's see. Now, as I mentioned, it's all about the data. Big data that I will mention later in this lecture. For small things, like if you need to classify, four cars, you don't really need to build a sophisticated neural network. But what if we have hundreds of gigabytes of data about cars? Of course, you can't do it manually. Or if you have, for example, you know, a high velocity of data, like network traffic. Network traffic, you know, we have at least 1 gigabit per second for each computer, maybe 10 gigabit per second for organization. If we take, you know, connection between campuses in Norway, it can be easily 100 gigabit per second. So we can't really do it manually, so we need to have this advanced artificial intelligence model that can help us to identify and classify, for example, things. Like in this case, you have a conveyor belt that has fish on it, and then we can use image recognition and machine learning to classify whether the fish is salmon or cod. So in general, we can see that machine learning is just a representation of the data. So we use data, raw data, training data. We have an algorithm that can be called as a cooking recipe, right? And then we put a final dish or the machine learning in the end of the training process. So to make this model good, we also have to have a very good quality data. So if we have the data that result in the model that can classify, you know, 50% of the fish correctly, then what's the point of having the whole process? So we need to have either better quality data or a different model that can comprehend this data. We'll talk also about features. They sometimes called as characteristics. They sometimes called as attributes. So depending on the book, depending on the terminology, but essentially it's the same. So like, for example, for the in these slides, we used weight and horsepower to classify. So only two features. Of course, if we have more features, more data, then we can get a false positive rate to zero, and we can get 100% classification. So that's the goal. So in general, if you look at the machine learning projects, if you look at the machine learning classification on real world data, we don't really get 100% all of the time. So usually, you know, if somebody says that, you know, it's 100% accurate, then it's 100% not true, because you can get like 95% classification accuracy, 70. This is more reasonable and realistic for the real world data. To increase this accuracy, you either need to have more better quality data, more features, or more advanced machine learning method and spend more time to train it, right? So to reach at least 99% and sometimes 100%. So some of the things that I mentioned briefly, but also we'll talk later, we have three general types of machine learning algorithms or model. This is classification, when we need to classify some things like cars. We have regression, when we need to predict something like, for example, weather forecast. And then we have clustering. So when we want to, you know, to, for example, find different types of fish on the image. So we know that there are some fish, but we want to classify them in different groups based on the characteristics. So that's the idea of using clustering. So, you know, when you design machine learning method, it's usually designed for the purpose. So we need to have some kind of purpose. So let's assume we want to classify computer viruses. We checked, for example, a portable executable header. We checked basic things like, you know, size of the file, a number of import functions, and other things to, you know, to be able to classify different types of viruses. But, you know, if we get classification of 0%, then something is wrong, either the model or the data. So we need to look and see, you know, which one doesn't work. So in this course, we're going to talk about big data. Again, big data is rather paradigm. So for some of the computers is like, 100 gigabytes big data. For some of the computers is like 1 gigabyte is big data. We're going to talk about AI in general and also the deep learning. So deep learning, it comes originally from the neural networks. So the way how the neural network are built, if we have, for example, 2-3 layers, this is shallow network or normal artificial neural network. If we have more than 3 layers, meaning that we have a more complexity. So the model can be very complex. It can model a very complex processes in real life. This is deep learning. Right. I'm going to switch to another slide deck. Just give me a second. Do we have any questions so far? Right. I'm going to talk about data in general and where do we apply machine learning. So how many of you know what is 4 V's of big data? All right, some of you heard. So that's just a general kind of, let's say, characteristics. As I mentioned, big data is a paradigm. So sometimes 100 gigabytes is big data, sometimes 1 gigabyte is big data. Let's say 1-2 decades ago, there was a transition towards understanding that the data became so complex that we need to have some kind of characteristics that are not like conventional. So IBM released this very nice poster. So they originally talked about 4 V's volume. So volume means that, you know, we have so much data that we can't store them conventionally. On our computers, we need some advanced storage mechanisms. Velocity, this is the speed of data. As I mentioned, you know, the network speed can be, you know, like tremendous, hundreds of gigabit per second. We have variety, so all types of different data. I mean, you probably know what is SQL, like MySQL, relational database, you know, order database. How many of you heard about NoSQL databases? Wonderful. So that's the example where, you know, you can technically place data of different format, and that was a push for such databases when, you know, the big data became like a new thing in the field. Because using NoSQL databases, you can store anything, right? Technically, like you can use relatively open format to store the data. And then we have also veracity. So veracity means that some of the data might have errors. Like, for example, reading the temperature every day might give us sometimes, you know, like hundreds of centigrees, because there was a light, you know, coming at the temperature sensor. So there can be such types of uncertainty, rather mistakes in the data. So we need to be able to handle such things. Now, right, so we have a lot of data. What's the point of having them and storing them and processing data? We need to extract the value. So in all of the applications, when we have big data and AI modeling, we talk about the value. So in case of computer virus classification, the whole idea is to get the model that can be used against new viruses, because, as you know, there can be like hundreds of variants of different computer viruses when it comes to, you know, families, types. And, you know, they can use, for example, encryption. They can use different names. They can do anything to change, you know, the detection, to evade the detection and to change, you know, the content of the file. Using machine learning and artificial intelligence, we can use a similarity-based detection, meaning that we don't need to have like MD5 hash sum to detect the file, but it's more about characteristics. So we can say that, you know, 90% this is a Trojan horse of this particular family. Now, people went crazy and they start inventing the V's, you know, like we need more V's of big data. So it kind of boomed all the way to, you know, like infinity, like 42 V's of big data, and we need more. Of course, that's a joke, but essentially that represents the complexity of the data. Right, so all four fundamental characteristics that IBM defined, they kind of expanded to, you know, to many more, like variability, volatility, like visualization, and so on. But in this course, normally we talk about, you know, volume and velocity of the data. And, you know, that's the core kind of, you know, understanding of the complexity of the data. Again, if you choose to work with machine learning or apply in your master thesis project, then you might look into, you know, generating some data. You might look into kind of building some kind of benchmark setup. So there are lots of different applications. Now, speaking in general about, you know, data out there in the world, it's a bit complex because we can see that, you know, it's not just something that we generate, you know, something that we put on the internet, but also things that are generated by devices around us, like machine-to-machine communication. I imagine we are like 20 in the room, and then, you know, probably have computer, mobile phone, a smartwatch. So, you know, it can be easily like 50, 60 devices connected to the internet, and they generate different types of traffic. So just by sitting in this room, we already have a huge footprint from the data generated by such devices. Now, the privacy, when it comes to you know, the data footprint out there, so it was much easier before because, you know, like 3 decades ago, the internet was relatively simple. There was not that much private information or even, you know, social media there. So it's all evolved where, you know, we moved into cloud, right? So we don't really store many things on, you know, on the hard drive, on the computer. So we have Microsoft Teams, you know, for cooperation. I don't know, Google Drive, for example, Facebook, Instagram. So all these types of, you know, platforms to store the data. So we don't need to have it stored. And that's the reflection of the digital footprint and all this, you know, veracity of the data, like big data, because technically, you know, there are so much data about us that we don't even know. How many of you heard about Cambridge Analytica? All right, I can recommend you to watch the movie, and the, you know, this is the magnificent application of AI and the data. So they have they had actually two types of things needed for this, you know, successful application: the data, a lot of data points, and then advanced models to model and to predict and give some kind of even recommendations. So that's the whole idea. Now everything becomes cyber, so it means that you know, in most of the crime investigation now, when the police involved, we have some kind of cyber. It can be phones, it can be CCTV cameras, it can be social media profiles, and so on. But nevertheless, most of the things, you know, become cyber. It's just because all of the data being stored on the phones, right? So essentially, we can survive even without having a computer because we have fully functioning operating system in our phones. So before you needed like a specific device to make a photo, make a video, you know, play music. Again, now it's being all packed in the phone with all these, you know, types of things. Now imagine all of the apps that you're using, or most of the apps that you're using on the phone, they all connected to cloud. So it means that most of the information that you give to the app can travel to the cloud. Of course, there are some restrictions like GDPR and what kind of things that can be uploaded. But essentially, you know, it all became much simplified and much easier. The storage trend also goes in a way where, you know, we have laptops with like 1 terabyte of data on the computer. That's technically, you know, a normal thing to have already. So we can have, you know, like storage of games, movies, documents in the computer. We don't really need to have like, you know, some kind of like super expensive solution. So normally, you know, like if you take 20 years ago, the size of the hard drive was like 40 gigabytes average size. Now it's like, you know, a few terabytes at least. And this smartphone storage trends, they increased as well. So as you know, we are in the era where like most of the phones, they have encryption, right? So any types of encryption, and police is very eager usually to get access to the data, even though the phone is locked or the computer is locked, because there are so many artifacts that can be used for the police investigation. Now, the data generated by the devices it brings more complexity in everything. So like 20, 30 years ago, we had just cable. So that was easy kind of to track where the device is connected to which switch. Now we have 4G, 5G, LoRaWAN, Zigbee, Bluetooth, all these types of technologies connected and interconnected. And then we are moving towards, you know, this kind of, let's say, era where we don't really know what are the devices in this room. They can be powered by battery. They can be, you know, connected to Wi-Fi, 4G. So it became very complex when it comes to not just cybercrime investigation, but when it comes to protection of such infrastructure. Now, digital forensics and computational forensics. So you've taken already introduction to digital forensics, so you know the basics. Just want to briefly mention, things when it comes to crime investigation and digital forensics. So as you know, there are four types of computer crimes. Information communication technology as a target. We have ICT as a tool, ICT affiliated with the crime, and crimes against ICT industry. So we've seen, you know, all these types of breaches, all these types of hacks where, you know, the data been leaked, for example, or the technology was breached. So all these types of incidents or crimes, they have, you know, multiple things around around that area. Plus, the whole complexity that, you know, many things stored in the cloud. So as you know already, cloud is a very complex thing to navigate through, and it's the novel technology, and you know the amount of data being stored in the cloud is tremendous. The good thing about the cloud is that, you know, we have tools to store, like for example taking AWS, Microsoft Azure, GCP, Google Cloud Platform. We have, you know, things to store, and we have things to process, and we have things to train the data. So technically, we can extract, you know, artificial intelligent model from the data in the cloud. Now, in digital forensics process, like we have two types of let's say operations. This is the field work, identification, preparation, approach, strategy, and preservation, and then we have also the lab. Lab work, so collection, examination, analysis, and preservation. As I mentioned before, some of the students, when they come to the master thesis project, they choose to work on some of these things like malware analysis, network forensics, network traffic analysis, intrusion detection. So I would recommend to look how you can optimize it using machine learning and existing Python libraries that you're going to learn in this course. There are a lot of different types of, mechanisms and subtasks that can be optimized using data analytics and machine learning. Like if you look at the general digital forensics process, we can see that everything, like all of the named subtasks, they can be optimized using data analytics. It's not just statistics, but also machine learning and building AI, you know, as a smart solution in the end. So computational forensics, I mentioned it before, but I'd like to mention it again as the prominent application of machine learning, right? So it's all about the data. Like, for example, on the left, picture on this slide, you can see a comparison of the existing picture of the footprint, and also let's say, some kind of model. So it can be, for example, model taken from the crime scene, or a model of a known shoe. And then we can use machine learning, image recognition, to kind of try to match it. Another type is soft computing. I believe they used fuzzy logic here. When the picture of the missing person and the skull found, they tried to do like 3D modeling to see if the skull matches image of the person. So that's the advanced things that are normally applied. Of course, this is not like widespread application. So in some of the cases, it's more like experimental application. In some of the tools, like machine learning tools, you get some basic things like recognition of the objects on the photos, or matching, files. For example, if there are any similarities between the photos, so all these type of basic operations, they already automated using any type of machine learning and AI. So now, why do we need to have AI for security, for forensics? And actually, that's just an overview, things that we do at the department, because there are different projects, there are different works where AI is applied for security in general, and also for forensics, and also for police work. So normally it comes to the understanding that we have too much data for manual processing, and we have new ways to commit crimes, like, for example, computer viruses. They can be obfuscated, they can be, they can include some kind of new encryption, new functionality. So if we have one MD5 hash sum, most likely it won't be applicable to the new type of viruses. So that's why we need to have more intelligent view on the characteristics that can handle real-world data, and also extract some kind of human understandable model. So one of the directions that we looked into is how we can get something that we can, understand as human experts, not just numbers or weights, but also linguistic terminology. And again, we have the expectation that, AI will solve all our problems. It's true. Again, software, hardware, development of the algorithms, it can help, but again, it's only applied to specific things, like, for example, making coffee or playing football. So are we there? Of course, the example that I mentioned in the beginning of this lecture is ChatGPT. That's a fantastic example, and I think, like, in my understanding, this a breakthrough that was that created a huge wave in the society and also in the field, because it can be used for a good purpose, but also it can be misused. But we need to understand that, we are not in the point where, ChatGPT will take over control of our world. It's only applicable to some specific things. And the same way, whenever we see artificial intelligence, is it really artificial intelligence, or it's some kind of statistics, right? So again, like, what kind of AI? If it does very, like, trivial things, like summary of the, number of customers, well, it's not exactly AI, it's just statistics. AI winters, I mentioned before that most of the methods that we will be talking in this course, they were developed like in 70s, 80s, 90s. For the rather small data, we are living in the era of big data where, we need optimization. So they've been up and down. When people like created the algorithms, they saw the vision, that the algorithm can be used to process the data. Unfortunately, there wasn't hardware like to train the data. So I think we are in a very good phase now, where we have all components, so that the application of AI can thrive. Also, you will see a lot of different, subfields. I mentioned machine learning, but also we have different types of data mining, databases, knowledge discovery, statistics, pattern recognition, neurocomputing, so genetic computing. So all types of, you know, things that are attributed to machine learning and AI. So a very simple example of training and testing. So as I mentioned, there is a phase called training. When we take raw data, we process according to characteristics, and we train the model. That's fine. So that's the part on the upper side. Next, we need to apply. If you remember the example with the car, we needed to predict what kind of gas mileage that particular car had. So in that case, we need to test. So it's called application of the model or testing. So it means that we need to extract those two parameters or features from the new car that we didn't test before. We put those parameters in the classification model, and then we take the output of the classification model, and it can say that that's a good mileage car, gas mileage car, or a bad mileage car. So to summarize, you know, all the types of machine learning models, we have classification, regression, clustering, all these different types of mechanisms that you will see in this course. But also, you know, things that we'll be talking is deep learning, nature-inspired methods, and big data-oriented improvements. So as I mentioned, we cannot apply methods that have been developed originally in the 70s, 80s to the data that we have now, because they won't work. Or they will take, you know, forever to train the model, so it's not really applicable. In real life, you'll need to have understanding why you're applying this machine learning. What's the, let's say, path that you want to take? Because as you can see on this picture, it's just an example of a rather brief overview of the roadmap that you can take for each of the steps in training and in testing, like processing, feature extraction, feature selection, you know, training the models, classification. Because as I mentioned before, there are different types of models, so it's not just one model, but we have multiple machine learning algorithms, we have multiple methods for feature selection, we have multiple methods for feature extraction. And the idea of the course that you get more or less proficient, and that you can recommend that, you know, we take one road or another one, depending on the needs and depending on the data processing. Now, another thing that I want to mention is soft computing. So that's, let's say, orientation towards big data and real-world data, where we have, again, a lot of mistakes. We have some kind of previously unseen patterns. We have, you know, things that were added by mistake or error. But still, the whole idea is to extract, you know, human understandable models. So something that we can get, like ChatGPT, you get in the end human understandable model that you can read, right, and you can use it. So things that are normally applied, it's called hard computing. So hard computing is the, for example, a rule. If X is true, then C is false. So that's the normal kind of application of the classic logic. Of course, this type of logic is not applicable to real-world data, because there will be also some kind of errors. Like you can see clearly the difference between hard computing on the left side. It's nothing wrong. You know, it represents the data. It conveys all the message. Unfortunately, it's not human understandable. So we still need to have this transition towards something that a human expert can understand, right? So if you train the model to recognize computer viruses, you need to have some kind of understandable decision in the end, whether it's a virus or not, or maybe what kind of virus, but also why, what kind of, you know, features indicated that this is a worm and not the Trojan horse. The complexity of the models will be different. It's another aspect that you should consider. Like I mentioned, that we can have, you know, support vector machine, we can have artificial neural network, naive bias. But the outcome of the model can be super complex. Like the most complex algorithm usually is decision tree. So if you have the data that is not a good quality, you can get a decision tree which is like hundreds of leaves and hundreds of layers, and that's super not applicable in real case, in real world scenario. So you need to consider also the complexity of the models. All right, thank you for your attention. So that was the introduction to the let's say to the subject, to artificial intelligence machine learning. Late in this course, we are going to go through theoretical, let's say, fundamentals of particular machine learning methods, like neural network, for example. And then also you'll have a practice with Kyle, looking how to implement and how to use libraries in Python, how to program it yourself, and using, for example, algorithms. Now, any questions? Anyone online? So the lecture slides I will put in the Blackboard, so it will be there. So the last question is, I think, can we go back from the model and back to the data? So sometimes it's possible in the data transformation realm, but in most cases it's not possible, because you compress like 100 gigabytes of raw data into a 10 kilobyte neural network model. So technically you can't go back, but nevertheless the model represents all these 100 gigabytes. So that's kind of like one-way function. You can say that, like, you know, it's like a cryptographic hash. Hash sum. All right. If no questions, then thank you for your attention. In case of questions, you can just shoot me email using this email address, and I can get back to you. All right. Thanks.
On Monday with an OSH class.
Once again?
We have a clash on Monday.